Aloha.
Hello and welcome. We are back from theballerlifestyle.com. It's the Baller Lifestyle Podcast. My name is Brian Beckner. Thank you all for joining us. Episode number 424 of the show, the Fatal Attraction episode. So this, like I said last week, and don't be afraid to share this one with your girl. Chicks love this movie. I watched it with my chick. She was excited to watch it. Women love this movie. And it's a good entryway for the females to get into the show, because a lot of times you tell somebody, goes, hey, what's your podcast about? And you go, well, it's kind of about sports. And they go, they're out at that point. And it's not even about sports. So you go, oh, they do. You tell them, oh, the show I listen to, they review movies, and they did Fatal Attraction this week. I keep wanting to say Basic Instinct. Fatal Attraction, a pretty good movie. Basic Instinct, a really bad movie, but both with Michael Douglas, because he never wasn't in stuff back then. So tell your lady, your bride, your better half about the show, see if she's into podcasts, or get her into podcasts, get her into this one specifically, and then get her to join our Red Circle, because if you have one subscription in the family, that's nice, but two is better. Two is more than one. How can less be more when more is more? So have her subscribe also. Click the link in the show notes, $5 a month or $50 a year, and you get all the bonus material, everything extra. Like, you're not going to hear this whole show that we're doing today unless you're subscribed to all the bonus material that we do here. So please do that. Be a good soldier for us. I am joined now, as always, by Mr. Ed Daly. Ed, how are you, buddy?
Doing well, but I want to tell a story, but I'd rather have full crew here before I tell it.
I am into that. We are also joined, as we are often. You know, I mean, if you listen to our Bachelor podcast, you're going to know this guy. Or if you've just been listening to us over the years, you'll also know him. Of course, I'm talking about the great Jason Stewart. Jason, how are you, my friend?
Hello, everybody.
Yeah, buddy.
Hey, Jason.
Yeah, it's been a while since I've been on the Baller Lifestyle. I thought that maybe you and or Ed were out of the Jason Stewart business.
Man, I love it.
Never. Yeah. Never
Jason Stewart business. When was the last time you were on? Was it Valley Girl? That had to be a while ago.
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
That couldn't have been Valley Girl. No, it wasn't the last one.
We did the most racist Christmas movie of all time.
You know, what's interesting?
Love that movie so much.
You were on Valley Girl, and Ed Daly hated Valley Girl, wasn't a fan, 0 stars from Ed Daly. And then we did Trading Places, which is a fantastic movie, a Christmas movie, one that we all love. And you, Jason Stewart, was not a fan.
Tepid response from him.
Yeah.
No. I was a fan. I was just shocked at the blatant racism.
I think you said something like, you guys actually like this?
Yeah, you were surprised that I said I loved it.
Yes.
No, you had said that it's like your favorite, like top three of all time. That's when I got really surprised.
I said it's like a top five comedy for me, for sure.
It's a great movie. It's a fantastic. So that wasn't that long ago, Jason. That was just Christmas. So that was like 5-6 months ago.
Yeah.
What do you
think? And like, I was thinking with this new Top Gun coming out, Jason, you did the first Top Gun with us. I was thinking we should do that at some point.
Yeah, episode 128.
So what you're promising me, Ed, is
two-parter.
When the Top Gun comes out on streaming in 6 months, I'll be back on the show.
Shit comes. I mean, I'm going to see it in the theaters.
Oh yeah, we all are.
But if you don't, things are coming on streaming. Like, I saw something in the theater, and then it's like, hey, by the way, this is on streaming. Like 2 weeks later.
Yeah,
weird. It's very fast these days.
I mean, some of them are day and date where everything comes out, comes out on every platform the same day. I mean, Top Gun won't be that, but we're going to see it. We're all seeing it at the theater.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
I mean, I think we should do it.
You guys, both of you guys see tons of movies. You guys are big, big movie guys. I don't see as many as I used to, but I make it out for the biggies, and I'm definitely
going to see that one.
Oh yeah. I'm out of town, you know, the week it comes out. So I might be a little bit behind you guys, but I'm going to make a run. And I watched the original Top Gun. I might have to re-listen to our pod. Like I said, episode 128. Again, that's a good ball and chain episode because ladies like Top Gun too. And I was watching I was watching Top Gun the other night. I mean, we did a podcast about it, and it's a very gay movie. It's even gayer. It's so much more gay than I even originally realized the first time we reviewed it. I mean, a lot of homoerotic.
We didn't miss anything with that volleyball scene.
That's for sure. I mean, yeah. Slider.
That was the most overt, the volleyball scene. But you're right.
I saw a headline today saying that Tom Cruise sang that song on James Corden last night.
No.
Yeah, whatever. Love and Feeling. And I was like, that might be the clip that I will avoid the hardest in life.
Wow. Yeah,
that's sad. That's a sad one.
Like, it's just when you thought that James Corden couldn't get any worse.
Yeah. That's got to be the worst people. Moment in television.
Yeah. I mean,
isn't he like surprisingly like young?
He's younger. Yeah. He's like 42.
Jesus.
I know. Hold on. You've piqued my interest here. James Corden, Tom Cruise, jet. Do they do? Oh my God. They don't do it in a jet, do they? You know, Tom Cruise is a pilot.
No, don't put it on. It's going to be awful.
Tom Cruise terrifies James in Top Gun fighter jet. Well, I don't want to hear that, but what should I type in?
That's probably it.
You think they did it? You think?
I think he was singing in the plane.
Stop. You got to stop. Okay, here we go. Let's click it. Is there going to be it's 15 minutes long. Oh my God. We're going to have to. Oh.
It is 4:56 a.m. I'm in Burbank Airport, and I'm here because Tom Cruise has asked me to meet him here at 5 a.m. But when Tom Cruise calls, you sort of have to say yes.
Yeah. It's pretty famous. Oh, yeah, it is. It's like a Lear G4, maybe. Hey, I mean, Tom Cruise here? Is a pilot.
Huh? What are we doing?
We're going to have a day.
We're gonna have a day.
It's
yeah.
Surprise.
I feel like I'm being
kidnapped. James Corden, slightly taller than Tom Cruise with the lifts. Okay, they're flying. They're probably gonna interview him. Oh, it's a Honda, the jet.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah.
Okay, here's another one. Okay. Oh, he's flying like a World War II fighter.
Are you good? Get a drink or
okay. I just want to hear the song.
Put your hands on my waist. Okay. That's a higher pitch sound.
Wow. Tom Cruise is shoe polishing the hair these days to just an extreme degree.
Baking right. Right.
He's almost 60. Oh. I don't know what this is.
Attract some kind of wolf.
This is us tomorrow. Ah, Jack!
Okay. Are they going to jump out of a plane?
Right.
I don't see him singing the song. Oh, now he's flying. He's flying like a MiG. Can he do this? Is this legal?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
It bums me out that this exists.
Why would you do this? Now, Jason Stewart, you jump out of planes.
Love it. Yeah. I love jumping out of planes.
Like actively, like you didn't just do it once. You do this.
No, I did it once.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to make it sound like I could do it a lot.
You would do it again though.
Oh yeah. If it was less expensive and more accessible, I'd do it all the time.
Well, first of all,
you have to like train and stuff, or do you just get strapped to somebody?
No, as long as you're jumping, you're strapped to a guy the entire time. That's
okay.
That's the, it's the most badass thing I've ever done. And I was strapped to a guy.
Yeah. and also you bungee. So you're a real
bungee.
I know it's crazy.
Oh, yeah.
I know it's crazy. Jason, you're a real thrill seeker.
Yeah.
Would you be up to be flown in a late model Russian MiG with Tom Cruise. Wire in.
I'd love it. I'm into it. I'm into it.
And then maybe you could get, because everyone knows you're an actor. We did, not sure which episode it was that we did here, but we did the inside the actor's stew deal.
That was great. I watched that one movie on Tubi with, was it Tessa Thompson?
Oh man, he really set us up for Tubi.
Yep.
Oh no, that was
Murder on the 13th Floor. Yeah.
I can still remember it.
Tessa Thompson, who is in the Thor movies.
Did you have scenes with her?
No, I didn't have a scene with her. But I will say this.
She's at the cocktail party, right?
Yeah.
I know Ed has a story to tell, but let's play a quick game.
Oh, I forgot. Yeah.
I used to play a board game called Starcross, and I loved it. And you basically, what you did was you picked out of a pile two actors, and the person that can connect the two actors in as least amount of movies as possible won.
Oh, so this is like Kevin Bacon.
Six degrees.
Tom Cruise and the guys who came up with
the Kevin Bacon game.
Oh.
Yes. Nice. Yes, that's basically what it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Are you able to connect me in the fewest movies possible with Tom Cruise?
Ed's going to be better at this. Let me think about it. I could do it. I could do it right now. Jason was in Murder at the Presidio with LDR.
Yeah, LDR.
LDP. LDP.
LDP.
Oh. LDP. Oh, yeah, LDP was in Young Guns with Kiefer, buddy of mine.
Who is in Kiefer with
Few Good Men. Yep. No, you may not. So what's that? What's Very that? Two good. Degrees?
That's three.
That's three movies or two?
Three.
Very good.
I don't think I can top that because I can't think of Lou Diamond or was...
Gina Gershon.
Yeah, Gina Gershon. Yes. Was she in...
Cocktail. So that's one degree.
Cocktail.
Wait a minute. Gershon was in Cocktail?
Shut up.
Holy shit.
Wasn't she early in the movie?
Yes. No, she's in the whole movie Cocktail. She's the love interest. She's the one that fucks Tom Cruise, and then Brian, what's his name, has to one up her, and he cucks Tom Cruise by fucking his chick.
So that's the winner.
At the Walt Whitman bar.
Cocktail connects me with Tom Cruise.
There you go.
Boom.
Yeah.
So my story is just a laugh at my expense. I'm doing a cross training thing today. I'm doing plank punches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I know it. Mm-hmm.
And I lower my head for a second and I punched myself in the fucking face hard and like dazed myself this morning. I punched myself. Yeah. Like I have a decent jab, I guess.
No.
Because I like dropped my head and the hand was still coming and I clocked myself like in the nose and saw stars. It was the dumbest thing. Like I fell to the ground from the plank position. I was like, I just punched myself in the fucking face.
You dropped your head. Dropped
my head. Like I don't know what I was doing. Like I was tired or something. But I kept the punches going and I punched myself in the face. It was very weird.
Shh, Ed, do we need to go offline right now? Is everything okay at home?
Yeah, I'm blinking. I'm blinking. Yes.
Do the hand signals.
There's no marks. I got myself in the body. No, there's no marks on me, but it was enough that I did the old like seeing stars thing. Like I got punched in the face.
That's what the good abusers do, Jason.
They work the body.
Yes, they make it. They make it. They know the pressure points. That's what the good cops learn to do so they don't get. Oh, episode 143. Is inside the actor's studio. I would encourage everyone to listen to that.
We sure
cover Jason Stewart. Jason Stewart, who is one degree removed or 2 degrees removed from Tom Cruise.
Indeed.
Yeah. In a movie.
So let's start off. This movie came out when I was 11 and I was very aware of this movie and like the big scene in this movie, but I didn't see it in the theaters.
No, fuck no. I remember like my mom and her friends being into it, which sounds about right for the time, you know, like I don't,
but everybody was talking about the rabbit.
Yeah, it was a big deal. The rabbit, the I won't be ignored, Dan. It was a whole thing. But I don't, and I saw it maybe, I don't know, like in my 20s or teens.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. And I don't remember seeing it. I think I'd only seen it once, maybe twice before I watched it.
I distinctly remember watching it in the movie theater, and it was a.
Well, you're much older than we are, Jason.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. I was born in 72, so
that's right.
I remember it being a great audience experience because there are a couple of things in this movie that you just didn't see. I mean, like shocking moments, and I remember it being fucking great. It was a great shocking thriller to experience with everybody.
Well, yeah, because like he's. So Glenn Close she's braless the entire time.
Yes, never wears a bra.
Yeah, there's no bras happening.
Two things. She likes to smoke inside, and she doesn't wear a bra.
Well, it was the 80s. Everybody smoked inside back then. That was NBD. Totally allowable. And bras were like, whatever. You know, she's got – doesn't have, you know, great big breasts, so she can go braless. But, I mean – you know, she was wearing like sheer tops out to lunch with full nipples on display.
Yeah. Turkey was done in this movie.
Yeah.
So the first time I saw it, it was in a bullshit college class where I had like the honors classes in college where I was part of the honors program. And those were the easiest classes. And so they had some interesting choices. And I chose one that was images of masculinity in literature and film.
Oh.
And then you had to pick.
You like wanted to see the cocks. Daily's choice, Ed.
Of course. Yeah. So it was like this whole film and book, obviously, literature and film.
Yeah.
And then your final presentation had to be, you had to pick like a common theme. And I did the movies of Michael Douglas because there was a long stretch where he was playing a certain type of guy, where it was the guy whose life is spiraling out of control. And that even goes to Falling Down. That goes to Basic Instinct. All these movies, they're very connected in that, like, his life is unraveling. And so that was the first time I saw it. And being 21 or whatever, I remember thinking I was too fixated. I mean, shallowly, I was too fixated on Glenn Close's looks. Watching it for the second time just this week, she is an amazing actress. Like in
she's so
amazing.
Good.
She's so good in this.
She's so good. Everyone in this movie is good. Like, she's so good.
This is a very well-acted movie.
Yes.
It completely holds up.
Like, it does.
Yeah.
Other than the very dated 80s things that we just discussed, but there is, you know, no obvious cell phones and busy signals and landlines and whatever. Yeah. But the themes, the acting is tremendous. And
so
like,
good.
This movie doesn't take like the outrageous leaps that a lot of 80s movies did. Like, most of the movies made in the 80s were done by like creators on coke, and they just took weird.
Oh, this was too. This was for sure.
Every once in a while, this gets a little out of control, but it kind of stays in its lane. And
it's
really
true to itself, I think.
It really is. It's a great watch 25 years later. It's been 25 years.
Yeah, impressive. I was surprised how much I liked it this time.
It's really good. And I always, you know, I have a standard joke where I'm like, this is, you know, how movie producers, you know how you could tell movie producers in the 80s were doing tons of coke because they tried to make Glenn Close a sex symbol. And that, you know, that's a joke. She had a perm and stuff, but she's not unattractive in this movie.
To quote my girlfriend, Christina, Ann Archer is much more attractive.
So
she's beautiful. I was surprised by that. I'd forgotten how good looking she was.
Yeah, this is the big fatal flaw for Dan Gallagher in this movie. Michael Douglas is... He cheats down. You never cheat down. You only cheat up. You don't cheat down. Only bad things can come from cheating down. You always cheat up.
Mildred Banna, it happens.
Right. It does happen. It absolutely does happen, but it's always a mistake. Ann Archer is stunning. She's so beautiful.
Was she like Patriot Games? What else? I'm trying to think of what else she was in, but she was
in tons. She was kind of like a Madeline Stowe. She was hot, and she was just in every movie back then. I believe, let's look at her
I want to say an airplane movie. Was it Air Force One or?
Oh, might have been. Yeah, because she was always the wife. Oh, right. Patriot Games. Good Patriot, one, yeah. Jason.
You're right.
I'm going to keep misnaming you guys.
That was it. That was it. Yeah.
I believe, and I'm not certain, but I believe Ann Archer is a Scientologist.
I mean, many are.
She got a lot of work in the 90s.
They get a lot of work. Oh, they did. They read. Oh, she was on Mannix. That's how long she's been around. She was on Love American Style.
That's like early 70s, right?
Yes, early. She's been working since 1970.
Had to be a child actress.
Yeah, yeah. Hawaii 5-0. She was on Ironside.
So she's got to be in her like early 70s.
I would say she's in her 70s. Okay, let's see here. Let's get up to this.
Wow. How old? I just saw how old she is.
Okay, don't get. Oh, she was on Falcon Crest.
I mean, she's working Love American Style. I'm just going to say she's my parents' age, so she's she can't quite be that. She's in her 70s. I'm going to say 72.
Yeah, I'd say like she might be like 75. Fatal. Okay, so Fatal Attraction is her first big movie role.
Okay.
Then she's in Eminent Domain. That sounds familiar.
That sounds like a Seinfeld movie. Like, you know how they would be like, hey, we're getting tickets to go see Eminent Domain.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Eminent Domain, I think, was about, it sounds like it's a thriller, like somebody wouldn't leave their house.
It's some kind of like communist thing. Donald Sutherland is in it, and he's real fucking old. Patriot Games. Oh, Body of Evidence, I believe. Is that another Adrian Lyne? Oh, that's the one with Willem Dafoe and Madonna.
Madonna, yeah. Where she pours the candle wax on his nipples.
Yes, that's another sex fueled romp thriller.
Yeah.
No, she's a worker. Okay, Ed, you or Jason, you already know. Should we do how fucking old is this guy right now? We'll do the whole cast.
His age, I can't explain. He was young back when he did that thing. Still alive, and I don't know why. How old is this fucking guy?
Okay, so I'm saying like mid-70s.
Michael Douglas?
Early 70s.
Michael Douglas has got to be, I'm going to say, late 70s because he produced Cuckoo's Nest. He's been around forever. Streets of San Francisco. Like, I'm going to say he is 77.
Okay. Hold on.
So did this go from Ann Archer to Michael Douglas?
Yeah, well, let's do Archer first because I'm on that page.
Archer, I'm going to say, is 71.
Yeah. Pretty close. She's 75, right? Of 1947.
That means she was 40.
She was 40. Yeah.
When this movie filmed, she looks amazing.
Yeah. She looks good. Michael Douglas. Okay. Let's guess Michael Douglas. What'd you say, Ed? I'm not going to look this time.
I'm going to say 77.
Yeah. I would say right. I would say right in there. I'm going to take the over and say that Michael Douglas is 78. Jason?
Man, I was going to guess around there. I can't say 80, so I'll say 79 just to mix it up.
Yep. September 25th, 1944. That makes him 78.
There you go. Bingo.
Right?
Right around D-Day?
So this movie came out in 87.
Right around D-Day. So Spartacus is like, I'm so excited. I need to spread my seed.
Yeah. Well, he was an actor. So he's born. So he would have been 42 when they shot it, 43 when it came out. That makes me feel better because I'm watching it and because they say he's 36 at some point in the movie.
Right. But
Yeah.
I think Glenn Close said she's 32 at some point. Did she not?
Okay. Let's look her up.
I would guess she's.
Yeah.
She's probably very similar to Ann Archer, but maybe even like a year younger. Maybe she's. Yeah, whatever Ann Archer is. You said 75. I'll say she's 74 now.
Okay, 74. I'm going to say even younger. She kind of has that late in life Les look, which is okay. No disrespect. I'm going to say she's a little younger. I'm going to say she's like 72. Jason?
Right between Archer and Douglas. So what, 76, 77?
Oh, you guys nailed it. She's the exact same age as Ann Archer, born 1947. That makes her 75. 75. So they're all kind of age appropriate. It wasn't a real how old is this fucking guy in the movie. They all kind of look like the age that they
the first
were.
Loop that they threw me was they were calling the kid Ellen. And I was like, oh, that's not a son?
I know. Yeah.
I thought it was a boy.
That was kind of weird.
Strange choice. Were they attempting to make the kid androgynous?
It was.
Did you guys recognize the babysitter?
Oh, yeah, she was in 30 Rock.
Jane Krakowski.
Oh, yeah.
Dad says I'm the best French kisser in Vacation.
She still had, she was a little Zoftig. She still had the baby, the baby weight from, or baby fat from, how about Herman Munster being the head of the firm smoking a pipe?
He wanted so badly to not be known as Herman Munster, but everything he did, it's like, hey, look, it's Herman Munster.
I mean,
even the judge in My Cousin Vinny, it's like Herman Munster. What a role though. Herman Munster was the best.
Herman Munster is great. Not easy to act. That show is so funny. I think we talked about it on the show before. I tried to maybe like 8-9 years ago, I tried to introduce my kids to it and they're like, okay, what is this? Why is it black and white? Why is Frankenstein? Like, they didn't get it at all. And I was just laughing so hard. But there's no one else could have been Herman Munster. Yeah. And then once you're Herman Munster, no, you can't be anything else.
I know. It's just one of those things. You have to be him.
Yeah. You just have to be Herman Munster forever.
By the way, I put it on in the background just to like have some reference points. Yeah. And in that first scene, Ann Archer brushing her teeth, not wearing a bra either.
Yeah. Oof. No bras. I mean, she's so bang. They go to that book launch. So at first, of course, I should have known because everybody's a lawyer in 80s movies or they work in advertising.
Or a very wealthy author. And I can tell you the author part is very shocking. Bullshit. There's not a lot of fanfare for book releases.
Yeah, there isn't.
My first book was published by Random House. They don't give a fuck about authors.
Yeah. I thought that too. Like they go, it's very 80s. They're going to like a book launch and it's, why is it so crowded? Like the whole fucking restaurant is packed with people.
Cause they wanted to laugh at Japanese stereotypes at the party.
Yeah, I know. Well, they're like, I hope you like sushi. Cause this was like the real sushi was really getting launched.
Yeah. This was the Japanese explosion. Like they're buying up real estate and we need to take on their culture. It was just, I remember everybody was curious about Japan. Like World War II, enough time had passed, and now we were like starting to warm up to Japanese culture.
Yeah, they were like China is today.
Yeah. And now Adrian Lyne directed this, and I believe this is the only decent movie.
No. I looked her up last night.
No, it's
she
a he.
Has a couple.
It's he, a he. Right? He's a he.
Oh, yeah. Well, wait a minute. What? No, we got to – we got to retrace. I looked up the director of this movie last night, and she's done a lot of good movies.
Still a he.
Adrian Lyne. Jacob's Ladder. Indecent Proposal, which was another Michael Douglas out of control sex movie.
Wait, that's Robert Redford.
Woody Harrelson.
Yeah. Indecent.
Yeah.
We sound pretty informed right now.
Unfaithful. Well, that's the movie that my buddy worked on.
Oh, that way where
with Diane Lane,
and Olivier Martinez, and his breath could knock a buzzard off a shit wagon, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
You know,
nine and a half weeks.
Yeah, this Adrian Lyne was like synonymous with like dirty sex. Oh, I forgot Junior Soprano was in it was in Unfaithful.
I
could have sworn this director was a female. I totally got that wrong.
You're the only one that thinks that.
I clicked on the picture. I mean, there's no gray area. This is definitely
pretty well known. Yeah. He has an ambiguous name.
Oh, he directed Flashdance and before that, Foxes. Remember that? Foxes?
No.
Was that Jodie Foster?
Oh, right.
Are you talking about Little Darlings or what?
No, Foxes.
Fox Force 5?
Jodie Foster, Scott Baio in 1980. Baio.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah.
That's when Baio was doing work. Oh, a group of four teenage girls comes of age in the asphalt desert of Los Angeles, San Fernando Valley, arranged with a blazing soundtrack and endless drinking, drugs, and sex. Ed, write it down.
Yeah, we got to do this. We should do Foxes.
I mean, it's starring Scott Baio, billed as Scotty Baio.
Yeah. And just the term foxes is so 1980s. Like, so nobody used the word foxes.
Also, they're teens. Like, that's kind of dirty. Like, you're calling it, like, I'm kind of grossed out. Yes. He's getting
calm down, buddy. Calm down.
Ease up, buddy.
But this director had some great choices. I think that he didn't make a lot of movies, but the ones he did were impactful.
Yeah.
I mean, think of the casting of this movie is perfect.
It really is.
And even Stuart Penk in the, not necessarily the news, plays the cheesy buddy who's like thinking he's getting women's attention at the party.
And he's a young guy and he's fat and he's doing that thing where he pulls his belt up over the belly.
Yeah.
Which never works out. You always go the belt. Just let the belly hang over the belt. It's less
he's
noticeable.
He's doing the Chris Christie.
Yes, he is. Now, didn't Stuart Pankin also have like a, didn't he also have a sitcom?
He was on It's Gary Shandling's show. I think he was one of the, I think he was like a friend or neighbor on that show. But I think he had a bigger role on another sitcom.
Yes, I do. Yes, he's a very recognizable face. Yeah, all the actors are good. I mean, the story's pretty good. He's this lawyer and his wife's out of town. They're buying a house upstate in the country. Did you guys think it was weird that they buy the house upstate and then within like 2 days, it looks completely lived in and there's fucking clutter everywhere and like newspapers. And it's like, when did you guys move in? That you read the
picture's
wrong?
Anybody who's moved knows that it takes like a year to be fully moved.
I've lived in this place for like 8 months, and on the landing of my stairs, there's like 9 pictures that need to be hung still. And they're never getting hung. Like, it's just they moved in, and a week later, like, all their fucking deodorant was there and their floss was by the bed, and just like everything they needed was right at hand. It was amazing.
The timeline. Yeah. The timeline's unclear in this movie. I think they do skip ahead quite a bit, but they don't leave markers to let you know that they have.
No.
Well, so, you're saying like how much time do you think has passed from when he talks to Glenn Close briefly at the party to when they
3 weeks?
It seems like it should be a couple weeks, but I think the timeline in the movie is more like 6 months.
Really?
And by the way, Jim Walsh of 90210 bumped Stuart Pankin and he spills his drink on himself. He has no speaking lines, but he just walks through and bumps it.
So I saw that James, what's his name? In the
Eckhouse.
I saw that and I'm like, wait.
Who was in Trading Places? Valentine, you made bail.
Yes. So and I was like, I didn't see him and I wasn't going to go back because it said like guy at party.
Yeah, it's right in the beginning when like I think Pankin is like, hey, check her out, talking about Glenn Close, and then he gets bumped and he spills his cocktail on himself.
So much champagne drinking in this movie. I don't know about you guys, and I like to drink, don't get me wrong, and I enjoy the flavor of a champagne, but my favorite thing about champagne is much like Tommy's Burger, I'm having the bad side effects of champagne while I'm still consuming the glass of champagne. Like, I'm already hungover. I'm two-thirds of a way through a glass of champagne. I'm looking for a place to lie down. I'm asking for aspirin. And meanwhile, these people are going to cocktail parties and they're just opening more and more bottles of champagne. Champagne is a very 80s beverage, but did they just not have hangovers back then, or would they just toot up in the morning to feel better?
Yeah, I agree with everything you said. I only see it at weddings and New Year's parties, and it does just give me a headache.
It really does, and I enjoy it. And even good champagne, gives me a headache. I really enjoy it. Well, Jason, you mentioned something about this, and I don't know how we lived like this, guys. The ringing phones. Why did phones, were they required to ring so harshly before the advent of cell phones? I mean, every phone rings so loud. It's not, look, I'm not 911 at my house. Like, if I get it, I get it. It was such a big deal to answer a ringing phone. Did that bring back memories for you guys?
It's one of the most dated things when you see really that is. In movies. You're like, oh, that's weird.
And also, like, the phones, and this rung true for me because this was the way it was in my house. The phones are always in the most inconvenient places to have a long conversation, like on the wall in the kitchen. You're just supposed to just stand there and talk on the phone?
And there's a time in this where, like, with the landline and that very old answering machine, like,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
In the cell phone age, or even like digitally, if you got Instagram or Snap or whatever, like, you expect a certain response when you reach out to your significant other because they're so accessible. To think that you had to call the landline, luckily get them while they're not in the bathroom or whatever, and then have them pick up the landline, that was the only way you were going to see if they were home or not. So when the wife calls them and she's like, hey, where were you? You weren't there. It's like, but it's about a 999% chance he wasn't going to answer the phone.
Yeah.
Like that's what the strange thing about the landline was, is that when were people ever available?
Right. How did we ever communicate with people? If somebody didn't answer their phone, you just would never see them again. They would completely leave your life.
I was telling my son has a friend who moved to Chicago, and I was like, you can kind of just stay in touch. And I was like, back when I was a kid, when somebody moved to Chicago,
gone.
It was like they died. There was just no chance of ever seeing them again. Talking to them, nothing. That was it.
It's over. And it's gone to the other extreme where kids don't even do anything with their friends anymore because they're just always in contact via texting or fucking gaming or whatever. It's like, oh, I don't need to have anybody over because we're always like kind of together anyway. It's weird.
Right. But, you know, that has also done a great service. There's nobody knocking on the door.
Yeah. Oh, fuck.
I was watching the show.
Yeah.
I was watching what's that show on Showtime that that 50 Cent produces and he stars? Power.
Jason.
Power.
Showtime. Do you think I'm fucking rich over here?
but it's made in modern day, you know? And if you guys watch it, it's laughable how many house calls are made. Like, people just, you know, show up at people's doors. Like, that doesn't happen. People just don't show up at doors anymore.
No, never. It's rude. I mean, it's rude. Now it's rude to call someone. Like, if you don't text first and say, hey, can I call you? You're considered an asshole. Imagine just be like, hey, I was driving by and I'm just knocking on your fucking door to see what you're doing today. Like, there's nothing more rude.
All right. Gary Gulman has a great line. Yeah. He's got this special on HBO called The Great Depression.
It's really good.
And in that, I think it's in that special. Maybe it's another YouTube thing that I saw, but he's like, the phone is simply an app on my phone. And if you use it, you better have a good reason to use it.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Why do we even call them phones anymore? That's the last thing you want to do.
I would take it one step further, and I'd say it's rude to leave a voicemail at this point.
Oh, yeah. Oh, totally. I never listen to them. And people are like,
why do we have to listen when you can just type it out?
Yeah. Yeah. I have a buddy that's like, hey, dude, your fucking voicemail is full. And I'm like, oh, yeah. And he's like, well, delete some. And I'm like, well, I don't like really need.
Something like 5 years ago, maybe even 10 years ago, the missed call became the voicemail.
Yeah,
that's the voicemail. Okay, Ed called me. I'll get back to him if I want.
That is kind of funny, though, because Ed had texted me a little while ago, and then maybe like 10 minutes or, I don't know, an hour after he texted me, I was driving. I looked down, and it's like FaceTime audio from like you were call, like Ed was calling me. He's basically calling me, and I'm like, "Whoa, is somebody dying? Like, is this man okay? Like, why am I getting a call right now?" And then I answered it, and I realized it was just like a lot of it was a butt dial situation, which is fine. Oh. But just the fact that he might have been calling me was
because I've never called you, not no, once in life.
I don't think so. Yeah, I was like in a state of shock. Like, well, oh my God, I hope everything's okay. I was so very worried.
Ed and me having beers in Manhattan one day.
Manhattan?
Is that the closest? Have you ever had beers
that is
with
your
Ed?
That's no. your Kevin Bacon connection. That's you've right. had beers with me, and yes. you've had beers with Brian.
That's right. Yeah, that's pretty good. I was
but Jason. Noticed, we didn't call to make plans. We just texted. We texted
a lot of text messages. Right. Yeah,
that's smart. Yeah, like I have some people that I text with that I just only DM, and I'm like, I could text, I could give this person my phone number, but it's like, why? It's never they never have a problem getting a hold of me just via DM. So it's like you don't like even texting is like denotes like a close relationship with somebody in a lot of ways.
Right.
So Michael Douglas, Dan Gallagher, he makes a lot of bad decisions in this movie. And look, he's horny.
He sure does.
But this is Glenn Close, Alex Forrest. And do you think it's – so they give her sort of a masculine last name. And she's and starting out the movie, she's very like alpha. You know, she's definitely the aggressor, which is interesting because she's like, should we go to dinner or something? And they go out. And Dan Gallagher is going on and on about being a lawyer. I mean, it sounded so fucking boring. And she's like, hey, so your wife's out of town. Should we just go home and fuck? Like, this guy's so dull about his fucking publishing law job or whatever he does. Shouldn't that have been a red flag to him? And I'll say this to most guys. If a chick is interested in you, shouldn't that be a red flag to you?
if there's no chase, if it's just like he's talking about law and she's like, okay, so let's fuck after dinner.
This guy's super dull. He's yarning on about, oh yeah, the cases and the law and the reading and the books. And she's like, hey, let's go to my place and fuck. And he's like, okay, I'll get the check. Like seemed a little sus in that sense because he's done nothing to attract her.
I think the dialogue during the restaurant scene like sets up the entire movie is set up in the restaurant scene. And I thought it was so well written.
Yeah.
Like there's
so good.
She gives a couple of red flags in there, but she acts it so well. Like it's fun to watch. And I think at some point she does something that she does a couple more times in the movie is she makes him uncomfortable. She accuses him of being a naughty boy, being with a strange woman while his wife is out of town. And he's like, having dinner isn't a crime. And she says, not yet. But that's like that's the first time that she says something like direct and forward, like not ironically, that you're like, okay, she's a little bit more than crazy here.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And then the next scene answers the question that we usually ask in these movies.
Oh, I was going to wait till the end.
I know. I mean, it tells us right away.
Yeah. I mean, this is one of those ones, and I hate to disappoint our dear friend Ivan out there, but there's not really much debate in this movie as to who the loud comer is. Like, there's one loud comer in this movie, right?
Well, there's two.
Yeah, but yeah.
It's but yeah, Son of Spartacus really loves styling it.
Yeah, no, he's and look, I know it's the movies, and they're trying to be horny and shit, but he's like nailing her on top of the dirty dishes, which is just like, look, I don't care. And it's a New York City apartment, so I didn't see like any dishwasher. I don't think it was the 80s. I don't think things were getting too sanitized. Like I don't really want to know that my dinner plate has had your jism on it. You know?
And there was as they were doing it on the sink, like she turns the water on and reaches back and then like wipes his face with the water, whatever,
But they're putting it in their mouth, and it's hot water. You're not supposed to drink that.
No. That was strange. Like the sex scene is obviously iconic and everything. But yeah. Let me ask you guys this.
Yeah,
I'm confused at this point. Whose place are they at? Whose place are they fucking?
So his. I had to have this clarified. It's her place in the meatpacking district that we see it later, but you don't know at first.
Yeah, maybe you don't know at first, but then you see him go to her place, and that's a different place.
And Ed, I know the meat.
Wait, hold on a second. You just said something that is the very crux of my confusion.
Yeah.
Were they fucking in her place, and then they went to her other place later?
I think they're fucking at his place at first, right? And then when they have the elevator scene, that's her place.
Yeah, that's the second session. They're fucking at her place both times.
Oh, they are.
Yes.
Okay. No, because when they go to the second place, he's acting surprised like he's never been there before. And if they're fucking in his place, there was no dog in that first scene.
Right. They're total confusion.
I just stumbled upon. Remember, we were talking about the realism of this movie.
Yeah.
A guy going dancing after he's had sex is completely irregular.
That's the yayo talking because. They bang, they get it out, and look, I know it's the 80s and you're trying to make things sexy, but like banging on the dishes, and then he's like in her, and he's like trying to carry her to the room, and he's like trying to get his pants off.
It's so difficult to have standing up sex. Yeah, it's just really difficult.
It's just, there's, beds were invented for one reason, you know, for fucking. That's where sex should happen, on the bed. It's the best place to do it. It's like this. I get you're trying to like be sex up, but they get it in. Like there's a lot of nipple sucking in this movie. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And she uses the water from the sink to put on her nipple too.
Yes. Yeah, totally. And so, but then they immediately go dancing.
I think all guys, when they're watching this movie for the first time, like looked at each other and like shook their head, because as I'm watching last night, they're done screwing. They've both released. They both had great orgasms. Yep. And she says, "What do you want to do?" And the next scene, they're at a rumba joint, salsa dancing. Nobody is doing that.
And no concern. Look, you're having an affair, guy. Like, I get I get that you're in the biggest city in the world, but no concern that you're going to run into somebody from the firm. Like, you're just fucking out and about fucking dancing. Like, is there any more look at me? It's not like you're in the corner of a dark bar having a conversation. You're fucking dancing. You're like, cha, 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 check me out. Right. Just fucking dancing away on the dance floor. Kind of weird.
I mean, it's a weird choice, but a choice that guys are having affairs sometimes make. Cause I remember running into a coworker with a underling coworker.
Oh yeah.
And they were singing karaoke. It was a bar that just happened to have like a karaoke guy show up. You know how like
Oh yes. And that was a big deal. Jason Stewart used to go to these. Jason Stewart is a big karaoke guy, and he would bounce around following. He'd be like, "Oh, the good karaoke guy is at Tijuana Willie's on Thursdays. We have to go there."
Yeah. So there was a just a bar we were meeting at, and there was like a karaoke thing off to the side, and then we see like a head trader, and it's with like a sales assistant. Yeah. And it was like, last week I was with your wife at Belmont. So this is interesting.
Well, some guys make
bad choices when they're having sex.
Yeah, that's and you know, some things are more acceptable in certain lines of work. He was the head trader and the head taker. Jason's dog shaking his collar in the background right there reminds me. So then, like,
so you're right, Brian.
Yeah,
both sessions were at her place because he just got back. Like the elevator scene, he comes back.
Yep,
and the dog has been laying by the door, and he checks the answering machine. So yes, everything was at her place. Yeah.
She sucks the literal life out of him on the elevator.
Yeah.
And what was up with elevator technology in New York City in the 1980s? Like, this is not safe. You're supposed to be in some cage, you know? You could easily put your arm outside of the thing and you could be armless.
Still, my buddy lives in a building with one of those, like, converted warehouse or, you know, bank and stuff. Like, they still exist.
So liability is not a thing in New York City, because especially the elevator that takes him up to his car late in the movie.
Yeah, that's terrifying.
Yeah. So scary. They still exist, but not in like a commercial.
Right.
It's going to be, you know, a smaller number of residents can deal with something like that. They're not going to let you do that for a parking garage because there's going to be lots of deaths in there.
Yeah, for sure. So and here's another red flag. Dan Gallagher, so basically that's all one night, right? They do one night, they fuck, yeah. they go dancing. It all starts because he's a New Yorker that doesn't have a decent, he's a New York lawyer that doesn't have a decent umbrella or is not able to operate his umbrella. So she, because in this sense, she's the alpha at this point. She has to rescue him with her umbrella. They go to dinner, and then before you know it, they're banging, they're dancing, they're blowing each other in the elevator. But then that's it. Like, he's like, okay, I'm out of here. I wrote you a note. He goes home, and he's got a lot of, you know, back to his boring ass law job. He's like, I gotta work. And she's like, look, your wife's gone. He's like, she's like, why don't you come back? You can work here. And now she's like trying a little too hard, you know, and he falls for it. And then he brings a dog. And then this is, look,
they're wrestling.
Yeah. You're supposed to be having a fling. Okay. And what happens in a fling is just the fucking, like, you just do the sex and then that's all that happens. What do? They go out and show of hands. Who in their life has ever frolicked like this? They're running.
Yeah. It's just straight up like romance movie frolicking.
Yes, they're chasing each other on grass. I'm allergic to grass. Like, I get itchy if I'm in too much grass. They're tackling each other on grass.
It's disturbing. I made that comment in the moment. I'm like, what is this? This isn't playful, flirty. This is like aggressive and trying to hurt each other. And then he does the – by the way – horrible practical jokers, these two. Like, horrible.
Yes.
He acts like
from
a heart attack.
Yes.
And then she returns the favor by saying, my dad died of a heart attack. Both of them are just awful.
Yes.
Awful practical jokes.
I hate pranking. And then he's
stupid.
Yeah, he plays dead, and then she flips it. But and I'm like, oh my God, she's that guy. The guy who's like, oh yeah, I actually you can't make fun of lupus. I have an aunt with lupus. You know, she's like, oh, my dad died of a heart attack. Like, oh, okay.
Right.
We, you know, most people do. It's okay.
But then the red flags keep coming because they go back to her place.
Oh,
and
my
she's
God.
Blasting opera music.
Opera. And he's like, oh, I love Madame Butterfly. What?
what is happening here?
What is going on? Like, She's forcing you to listen to opera, and then you're acting like you like it. So not only do they frolic in the park, which is never happens, is not real. Then they go back and she's like, I'm a great cook. She makes him dinner at her place. That's a you've been dating for 3 months date.
Yeah.
That's not I'm having an affair with you. I just met you yesterday and banged you last night. Like, well, I don't come over for dinner. That is not something we do. That's a relationship move. Again, another red flag.
Right. And you, while I'm cooking dinner, you got to listen to opera.
Yeah. I'm going to throw on opera. And then they kind of get in a little, she throws out another red flag where she's like, I feel like I know you already. You just start backpedaling like fucking Daryl Green in that moment. You're like, hey, actually, I'm not Dan Gallagher lawyer. I'm Deion Sanders, and I'm dropping back into cover two right now. Like, I'm out of here. Goodbye.
And during dinner, she does it again.
Yeah.
Where she asks him about his marriage and his family, and then he's like, I'm lucky. And she says, so what are you doing here?
Yeah.
He just lets that sit there.
Yeah.
Like, what a fucking crazy bitch.
Yeah. And at some point she drops the always disturbing ML phrase.
Oh.
Make love. Which is yet another red flag.
A regrettable term.
Yeah.
But then on top of that, if you're going to use that term, that's not what people who are having a quickie affair are doing.
No. Now, the question is begged. And it's not apparent in the movie, but how good is Michael Douglas at fucking? Because this Alex Forrest is dick whipped 5 minutes in. Like, this guy must just fucking lay it down like a pro, because she is fucking into him, and he's not really giving, he's not saying he likes her. He's, all he does is talk about his boring job and his stupid family and his dumb kid and his dog. Like, it's, he's not really offering, and he's telling her, hey, I'm married. Like, I'm out of here. And yet she can't get enough. She literally, not to spoil the plot, she has a fatal attraction on him. What do you think? Also, that's a big giveaway. I just realized that just now. This is how dumb I am. I just realized that the name of the movie is actually a spoiler.
Well, it's like, so they get done, as you just said, having sex again. And he's like, I got to go. I got things to do.
Yep.
And she's like, she has a problem with him running away after every time they make love.
Yeah.
And he says, we're adults. And she gets all snooty about it.
Yeah.
But to be honest, at the very first dinner, she was the one who said, we're two responsible adults.
Yeah, that's what they do.
Adults.
This is what they do.
And then she says, I would respect you more if you just told me to fuck off. So then he says, okay, fuck off. And he tries to walk out.
Yeah.
Then this thing escalates in a hurry.
Is that when she rips his shirt, or did she rip it before he says fuck off?
Yeah, I think she rips it before.
I think it's before. And then she kicks him after he says fuck off. So she's hit him and she's kicked him. And then as he's walking out the door, it escalates in a hurry.
Here was an easy out for him right here.
Yes.
He knows he's in crazy town and he's in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
And he has an out and he doesn't take it.
Yeah.
Right.
He attempts to take her own life in front of him.
As my girlfriend Christina says, superficial attention getting wounds.
You know what? My girlfriend Cheyenne said the exact same thing. Yeah. She's not deep enough. Because I'm like, well, those would be bleeding way worse. And she's like, oh, no. This is not an actual suicide attempt. Yeah. This is to get my attention. Yeah. So then in that situation, you call 911, you fucking wash your hands of the situation, and you go, look, I might have to come clean with the old lady. Like, this could be the end of my marriage. I fucked up here.
This is crazy town.
I'm probably going to have to tell her. What does Dan Gallagher do? Like he's in fucking Platoon. He goes upstairs.
Triage unit.
Yeah. He starts ripping up sheets, which is, I think, something that only gets done in the movies. And he doesn't tourniquet.
He doesn't check to see if she has towels.
Yes. Of course. Immediately.
Why are you ripping sheets?
Or bandages?
And then he wraps her wrist and he like ties them with little bows. Like, it's like a sassy little fucking like wristbands. I mean, just stunning behavior by Dan Gallagher. He kind of deserves what happens to him, considering all these red flags.
You know who probably should have watched this movie is Steve McNair. Old Air McNair.
Oh, cinnamon roll?
Yeah, Cinnabon.
Cinnabon, that's it.
Because, he could have seen some red flags.
I think that if Jaws was the movie that scared people from going in the water for a while, I think any guy watching this movie should have been scared straight a little bit.
Absolutely.
At least a little bit.
No, the affair rate had to go down immediately after this. Because this is a real possibility, not to this extent, but close enough.
But you certainly would have to watch the signs a little more. Maybe pre this movie, you think, oh, I'm just having fun. You see this, then you have to be looking for signs of crazy.
Sure.
Yeah. No, he makes a lot of bad mistakes. And look, maybe you can give him, hey, he doesn't want her telling his wife. So he's going to hang out and like make sure she doesn't die. Although like once he saw her bleeding, like head out the door, buddy. Like Jesus. You're free and clear. Who cares what happens? You know, like oh, just, you're done.
And also,
they're not going to look for your jism inside of her. Yeah.
And, you know, he must be really good at sex because
yeah.
He's wearing grippers the whole movie.
Yeah. Right.
He's wearing the whites.
Yeah, he keeps it. Oh, it was the 80s. Were boxers invented in the 80s? I feel like
wore boxers when I was 11, so they existed. Even an 11-year-old boy knew the grippers were out.
I feel like they fell out of favor, though, because boxers, yeah, real big in the 50s, 50s and 60s, and 40s. You know, the guys going to war, they had like the green, everything had to be green, including your boxers, so that there was boxers around back then. But then I feel like 70s and 80s, was the real heyday for whitey tidy.
Yeah, I guess it's just it's kind of jarring sometimes. Like that sex scene against the dirty sink. He's got the grippers at his ankles.
I know that really put me off as well. But that was the moment to bounce. Like I get that he can like hang out with her a little bit. Hey, how's the wrists? You know, you're not gonna. There's no pills around here, right? We good. And then you're just, again, you're trying to think of a third defensive back. I've already used Daryl Green and Deion Sanders.
Well, you could Revis Island. I mean,
yeah,
you
could. Yes. Daryl Revis. You could Daryl Revis your way back through the meatpacking district. Now, I know the meatpacking district wasn't what it is now back then, Ed. But did they really, I mean, were they really carrying meat? Like they were actually like walking through the actual meat packing plants.
Yeah. No. And it actually existed until like really only about 20 years ago did it start to turn. So there would be clubs and some really good dive bars. I never went to the clubs, or maybe I went to one, but I went to dive bars around there, and there would be like literally guys carrying things to trucks in the morning. No,
like sides of beef and like legs of lamb.
Literally where I think there's still some there, but there's Gansevoort Hotel. There's like a lot of nicer things there, an Apple store. Yeah. But I think there might even still be some of that, but that's still what it kind of looks like.
Right.
But it's
true life.
Yeah.
So I don't know why he lingers, but he does. He lingers. I guess he wants to make sure she's okay. But then he eventually bounces back to his house, and this guy's making bad decisions left and right. So he gets home and he's like, I haven't been home all week. That's another way you know he didn't fuck her at his place, because he gets home and he's like tousles the bed, and you know, he's got to go to work, but he's like,
he had the leftover spaghetti he had to get rid of, so he fed it to the dog.
So this is a huge big mistake for me, because at one point, Ann Archer, again, pretty hot wife is.
And by the way, every single scene they have her in up until the very end is she is the perfect understanding.
Totally.
Wife.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The model wife. Yes, like there are really no flaws. Yeah. Every scene they have her in, she is the exact opposite of whatever the mistress could be.
Totally. She's banging. She's very dutiful. Like exactly. It's just the picture perfect. But this is back in the 80s when men weren't allowed to know how to feed themselves, which is very common. So she's like, hey, I remember I left that spaghetti sauce in the fridge. Cause back in the day,
an old Blondie comic strip, like still in the 80s.
Men would die if there wasn't a plate. And it wasn't just like the wife would have to make the things. They would have to put it all on a plate and keep it in the oven for you, or else you would not be able to sustain yourself. Hey, Stu, having a conversation off mic. So she's like, hey, I left you that spaghetti sauce. So he comes home and he tousles the bed. And then he's like, oh, I forgot to eat that spaghetti. He gives the spaghetti to the dog. That dog. Is going to, and if, excuse my language here, that dog's going to be spraying diarrhea all over his apartment in the next 5 minutes. Like he gives the dog the spaghetti. That is not the right, the dog's diet.
He didn't give the dog plain pasta. He gave it with the sauce. That's not good for the dog.
No, he gives it with the sauce. The dog eats dog food. That as soon as he walks out the door, that dog is just going to be just spackling the walls with dog shit. And it's like, what? We're just supposed to expect that's just a normal thing to do? Insane. Just throw it in the garbage disposal, buddy. Just be rid of it. No, don't give it to the dog.
Absolutely no garbage disposal.
As soon as I said it, I'm like, wait, they don't have a dishwasher. They don't have a dog. They don't have a garbage disposal.
Your best option is to throw it out the window.
Yes. There you go. Or just eat it. You got to be hungry. You've been fucking for 2 days.
That's true.
Yeah.
Aggressively fucking.
Big time. So I don't know what else happened. So he thinks it's done at that point, right? He's like, look, she tried to kill herself. Hopefully she gets help.
And he tries to avoid the calls at that point.
Yes. She starts calling his ass at work. She's calling his secretary.
And he tells the secretary to run interference. And then she makes the jarring phone call at like 2:30 in the morning.
Yes. Yeah. No. But at some point she shows up like, oh, she calls him. But before the phone call, right, she shows up at his office.
Yes.
And he's like, you know, I hope you're okay. And she's like, you know, thank you for staying with me that night. A lot of guys would have just run away. And then fucking red flag number 71. She's like, how about, you know, just for old time's sake, because we've known each other 37 hours and we've already banged and a bunch of times, and we went dancing and I made you dinner and we frolicked and I also tried to kill myself. How about, like, to catch up on old times, we go on a date to see an opera.
Oh no. That's right. That's right.
Madam Butterfly.
Oh my God, I'm coughing. Madam Butterfly. Like, haven't I been through enough? I already pretended to like opera at your apartment. I'm not going to an actual opera. Could you imagine?
Wow. And he has, you know, he's a lawyer, so he knows kind of his way around words.
Yep.
He lets her down pretty good here. And he has her, at least as far as we know, understanding that this was a one-time thing and let's go our separate ways. I will point this out. Very 80s thing on the desk were kind of like a glass of sharpened pencils.
That's tons
sticking
of them.
Up.
Tons of them at his law office.
And a rubber band ball.
Yes.
When was the last time you saw a rubber band ball?
I know. Yeah. And what is today? What was that?
And I'll tell you why.
What? Yeah.
Because I needed to get rubber bands and I saw they sold them in Target in a ball form. And I was like,
no way.
That.
Just today?
Shut up.
I got it over the weekend. And I used a rubber band from a rubber band ball today. I got it at Target over the weekend.
I thought that stopped 30 years ago.
You know.
I did too. That's why I had to get it. Because I was like, I'm actually looking for rubber bands.
You.
It's a long, long story.
Ed. School related. You know that there's some child slave in Macau right now. She's 4 years old and all she does all day is ball rubber bands.
I'll send you guys a picture later. It's
unbelievable.
It was purchased in ball form. It wasn't like I created it.
Unbelievable. That's so funny.
But I got it because I was like, holy shit, I haven't seen one of these in forever.
By the way,
I looked up the androgynous daughter. She becomes Ruby Sue in Christmas Vacation. She's the one when he's staring out at the, he's fantasizing about the pool and he's starting to work one. That's her, Ruby Sue.
Oh, she got other work as a child, but she.
Yeah, she was a child actor.
Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. That makes sense.
That rings a bell.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So we have two actors in this movie that were in National Lampoon's franchise.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely. So then he's, you know, the wife's back and he's trying to like make it seem like nothing's that big a deal, but he's way over the top with it. Like she's getting ready to do something and she's putting on her makeup and he's just like sitting there like longingly like admiring her put on makeup. Like if you want to, if
the
you want,
director made some choices with that scene too.
Yeah.
He was like zooming in on her bra and it was like, what's going on here?
Did you guys notice? And this was a big thing in the '80s that I recall. And I, maybe it still is. I have to be honest. I haven't really noticed it in a long time. Ann Archer was a non-upper leg shaver.
Did you guys notice that? Shaving her legs? I don't remember.
They showed her in bed, and her upper legs had a nice peach fuzz on the upper leg.
I did not notice
that. In the 80s, that was I recall that being a thing where women would just shave like from the knee down, and they would not shave the upper portion of their leg. Women in the audience. Reaction? Do you guys remember that?
Interesting.
The one scene that shows. Yes. I mean, we already knew she was crazy. The one scene where she's just turning the light on and off.
Yeah,
that is scary.
Yeah. Well, is that when? That's when she calls at the dinner party, right? Or they're
bowling. They're bowling when she does the lamp thing. That was the juxtaposition of them having a great time with their friends.
Like a double date bowling with Stuart Pankin.
Yeah. Has bowling ever been 1% as fun as they make it out? Like they're like laughing and they're fucking like jumping up and high fiving and doing like champions chairs and shit. And it's like so exciting. And then they have a dinner party and he's telling his boring ass law stories again. And they're cracking up and pouring more champagne. I mean, I got to feel like there's low key. There was a lot of yayo implied in this movie. Like these guys were blowing
bowling
lines
alley
left and right.
Seems like probably a good place to do some cocaine.
Yeah, of course.
Well,
yeah.
Michael Douglas and what's his face's wife, his buddy's wife, are lip kissing friends.
Yes.
So there was the implication that there was some swinging as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but Ann Archer, that's a bad deal for her.
She loses that one.
Yeah.
She loses that one.
Yeah. You definitely,
I'm not fucking Stuart Pankin.
That's really, I mean, do we have any swingers in the audience? Because that seems like a real problem in the swingers community is just the unfair trade. And I feel like it's usually the wife that has to take one for the team. She's really
taking one for the team.
Yes,
I guess one.
Yeah. That was real true to life. So eventually, like she's calling during the dinner party. We can see that she's losing. And then she pulls out a couple of just the good old chestnuts. First of all, she comes to his office to see him. And she drops the I love you, and which, you know, red flag number 79. And he's like, he doesn't run away. But then she throws out the old I'm pregnant.
With child.
Now, look, how long has it been? You know, has she had time to miss a period? This might support Jason Stewart's timeline of this movie a little bit better. That she, you know, enough time has passed that maybe she's not showing up every day, but she's still calling. He thinks it's kind of fading out, but then she shows back up and she's claims she's pregnant. Now, again, Michael or Dan Gallagher's decision making here immediately. He just believes her. He's like, oh, yeah, I guess. And she's like, and this is something a liar always does immediately. She goes, "Oh, you can call my doctor. Go ahead and call Dr. Stevens. He'll tell you that I'm pregnant." And so he immediately believes her. But this goes back to something he did earlier in the movie. This guy went unsheathed with a rando.
Yeah, he had to have, because they were fucking in the elevator. He was not preparing anything there.
No, he's no. Not only does he go unsheathed with a rando,
he stays in.
He finishes internal.
And this is at the height of the AIDS crisis. There was a lot of fear in 1987 of going in unsheathed.
It's my recollection that you typically have a conversation about that where A, I'm going in unsheathed, and here's where I'll be finishing, because he does do that thing where he's like, well, you didn't, you know, you're not on anything. This is discussed beforehand, before the internal ejaculation.
Right. You don't have to be animals. Like, there can be some conversation.
Yes, there has to be. You don't just rock and fire. I don't care if it's 1987 or not.
Pulled down the grippers and went at it on the dirty dishes.
Yes. Unbelievable. And then he's like, well, then he does what a sane person would do. And he's like, all right, well, look. I'll have maybe you can get a ride from your brother Brad. He'll drive you down to the to the you can tell him you're going bowling or whatever. And he'll drive you down to the clinic, and he's like, and I'm good for, you know, I'll take care of him. I'll pay for it, which is a very nice thing to do. But then she's like, oh no, I'm having it. I'm keeping it. And which again, that I mean, he starts to kind of go a little bit insane. This is right around the part where he tells us that he's 36 years old, which is a little shocking. So he's like, he's kind of losing it. And then I can't remember, I guess this is what prompts. Oh, he wants to determine whether or not this is true or what, like what.
He sneaks into her apartment.
And what does he discover? Maybe the most disturbing thing we find out about Alex Forrest. She's a scrapbooker.
Very disturbing.
Hey, fam, there's still a lot more of this episode to hear, but it's only available to our bonus content subscribers. Click the link in the show notes or go to theballerlifestyle.com and subscribe so you never miss a minute of the show.
Ron Beckner, quick to dissect the week in sports and culture and whatever. Podcast, man, no one is above us. 5-star, even the haters will love us. And we're not trying to talk politics a lot. We'd much rather talk about dicks a lot. Shit's so hot, man, you know the shit's on top. Top podcast, man, it really hits the spot. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is so flawless. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. Listen up, you players and shot callers. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller. And you know the show is for all us. TBLS, the lifestyle's baller.